This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello, my name is Susan Shaw, and I'm a program director in the Center on Immigration and Justice at the Vera Institute of Justice. In 2010, the Vera Institute and the COPS Office partnered to produce a guide for law enforcement agencies that were looking to either begin or enhance their work with immigrant communities. The guide is a national report titled Engaging Police in Immigrant Communities, Promising Practices from the Field. This report profiles promising practices from 10 policing agencies across the country. This podcast is a part of a series of recordings that accompany the report. Each podcast is in a Q&A format and provides practical advice from agency personnel who've been involved in the promising practices featured in our report. In this podcast, we are joined by Monique Dreyer of the Brooklyn Center Police Department in Minnesota. Monique is the department's community liaison and has worked on various aspects of the Joint Community Police Partnership, known as the JCPP. She's here to talk about how to work with multilingual communities when you are not bilingual and how to get officer buy-in when you're starting out as a civilian liaison. Thank you for joining us today, Monique.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Monique, can you tell us briefly about what the Joint Community Police Partnership is and also describe your role?
Sure. The JCPP, or Joint Community Police Partnership, is a program that was designed to build bridges between our new American community and the police department in Brooklyn Center. The program achieves this through a three-pronged approach, if you will. First, we improve community members' knowledge of what the police do or police procedures and laws. And secondly, we improve our patrol officers' knowledge of the new American communities. In my opinion, most importantly, we provide that opportunity for positive interaction between our foreign-born and mainstream populations in law enforcement. My role is to manage the program at the police department level and make sure that we accomplish the goals set forth in the program.
For our listeners who might be unfamiliar with Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, could you tell us about the multilingual immigrant communities in your city?
Well, we are very fortunate to have a melting pot of sorts. Our city has approximately 30,000 people, and according to the 2010 census, 52% of that population is foreign-born. I'd say that the largest immigrant communities are from Africa, Southeast Asia, and Latin American countries. To give you a real sense of how diverse our population is, our elementary school currently has approximately 80 languages that are spoken throughout the school day. At one point, I had the opportunity to speak with a community member who had asked me, "How many times in a week do your officers have contact with new American communities?" I responded, "Hourly." The community member didn't know the demographics, but our department certainly is aware of them.
So I know that, you know, given that you've got all of these languages spoken in Brooklyn Center, it may at first seem like it would be a challenge for someone who's been as successful as you in your position but doesn't speak another language. How do you communicate with community members who speak primarily a language other than English?
Well, through the department resources, I have access to the language line, and I can use it as I need to without having to first get supervisory approval. At the police department, regardless of your position, you can help the community we serve by using the language line as the need arises. I also rely heavily on the multicultural and multilingual cadets for language assistance. We currently have 4 officers, 1 cadet, and 1 record staff that is either bilingual or multilingual, and they have been extremely helpful when I have to go out into the community to give a presentation and or need the live interpreter. Sometimes there is a community member that may even be bilingual and is able to interpret as well.
So those are some really important resources. Have you developed any other techniques to build rapport with community members who speak little or no English?
I found that simply smiling and using facial expression to show a sincere interest in the person is universally understood across languages and cultures. If someone can speak some English, I've found that patience and listening very intently to what is being said can be very valuable. It shows the person that you care and that you're making an effort to understand. I think people from various cultures can sense if someone's patient and interested based on their overall body, language, and demeanor. We had a Hmong family, and in this family, mom and dad only were able to speak Hmong, and the victim was only able to communicate because she was deaf or hard of hearing by signing. So by taking an officer, one of our multicultural cadet, now officer, out with me to be able to meet with the family, we were able to get them the resources that they needed, not only as a family, but also to be able to open up communication with the family, whether it be mom, dad, or the siblings, so that the victim was able to communicate.
So that's a really powerful story of how, you know, you really were able to break the ice, so to speak. What other advice would you give to a non-bilingual person who's beginning outreach efforts in multilingual communities?
Well, I found that to build real, meaningful relationships, I had to be humble enough to tell people when I didn't know or understand something. I would ask a lot of questions to learn about the cultural do's and don'ts. Building relationships is not an easy business. It is not accomplished overnight. I would follow up with people on a regular basis and make good on the promises that I would make to them, and also provide them with the needed information that was culturally appropriate to their specific concern or need. It takes a lot of conversations, education, and follow-ups, but in the end, it is totally worth it.
So now I'd like to switch gears and talk about how you gained the trust of another group that you work very closely with, police officers. You know, police officers sometimes joke that they're taught to trust no one, especially a non-officer. When you first started out in this position as a civilian liaison, how did you get officers to trust you?
Well, initially I was given a blank slate to develop the program so that I had to develop a program from the ground up that involved not only getting to know the community, but also getting to know the officers. In the first year, it was my goal to know one personal thing about each officer. You know, it's ironic that a former lieutenant used to say that officers weren't born in their police uniforms. You know, I made sure to acknowledge that, and I made sure that I remembered that officers have wives, kids, and families just like I do. And I knew it was going to be hard in the beginning to do trainings for officers and give them feedback if I didn't know who they were and what they were all about. So I went out into the streets and spent a lot of times in their squad cars, essentially their offices, getting to know them because I knew that I had a lot to learn. I spent time doing ride-alongs, as I stated, into wee hours of the morning and started to get to know the police culture. I asked a lot of questions, sometimes perhaps too many, and I had to be okay with telling them that I didn't know things and asking them to explain things to me. I did a lot of listening as well.
These are great strategies, and it seems like what you really are, you know, focusing on is how important it is to have a personal approach when you're working with not only community members, but also officers. What other advice would you give to someone who's, you know, who would be in your position in a newly hired civilian liaison role on how to get police officer support and buy-in?
In order to get buy-in from the line officers, even the command staff, I needed to be able to provide a tangible or something that they would be able to use on the streets. And it really helped to be able to get a cultural toolbox of sorts, if you will. And I think it would be important to state that I was very respectful and I did a lot of listening, as I stated before, and participate in roll calls and do as many ride-alongs as possible. The more time that I was able to spend with them, the better that I was able to get to know them, and then also to be for them to get to know me. If you can, I think it's important to have that, have a resource guide or a cultural toolbox, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, for officers to be able to use when they are out in the street.
So what was in this resource guide?
Oh, anything from maybe it's a food shelf, if they come in contact with an individual that may need a food shelf, maybe it's a domestic violence shelter. Anything that an officer might come in contact with.
So you basically provided them with all these resources they probably didn't know about in a lot of ways that you were learning about from the community? Or
as I would learn things, I would share them with the police officers, and we try to update that as often as we can. Currently, we now have a resource guide that is designed for domestic violence specifically, and we've been able to break that down into the different categories. So there's one in the command area, the shift sergeant's area, that they can have readily available to them as the need arises.
I can see it being useful to command and also to patrol. Was there anything else that you did specifically to get command staff buy-in?
Well, I think the attending meetings as requested by either the chief and or the command staff. but also to be able to offer maybe input in areas that may be appropriate, such as to crime trends. I would also attend the Crime Reduction Strategy, or we refer to as CRS, which is a weekly meeting where command staff come together and they review the crime data and see if there are any trends and brainstorm ideas. Sometimes I would just go to hear about what the concerns were. It may not even be an issue that I would be dealing with, but found that when it was helpful, I would speak up about my experiences, perhaps even in the meeting or away from the meeting on a one-on-one basis, however I felt that it would be helpful. I've helped out in very sensitive cases where both the community and the department's trust in me have allowed me to truly serve both groups. I think it's important to know in a position like this that you have a foot in both worlds, and once the command staff and your patrol officers see that you do have a foot in the community as well as the department, it bodes well for you.
Thank you very much for these great tips on working with two very different groups, multilingual communities and police officers.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice Cops Office. The Cops Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.